Hi, welcome to another episode of Token Talk. Be sure to subscribe and check us out at www.budsy.io or on Twitter and YouTube at Budsy Delivers or Instagram at Budsy Tokes. Just a quick update from Budsy before we begin. We're currently live with our beta test in Santa Barbara. If you or somebody you know is located in the area, you can download our app for free at app.budsy.io and check out how artificial intelligence and cannabis work together. Today we're talking with Trey. Hi Trey, could you go ahead and introduce yourself?
So, hey Majid, I'm Trey. I'm a writer from India. I've been a smoker now for, I think, 17 years. I started smoking when I was 15. I'm 32 now, so I think that allows me, I guess, a little bit of credibility to be able to talk about this and a little bit about the smoking culture that you find in India. And really excited about what you are doing over at Budsy. And let's get this started.
Perfect. Could you tell me whereabouts in India are you from exactly?
So I have grown up and I live largely in Bombay, now called Mumbai, which is like probably the premier city in India. It's the financial capital. It's where Bollywood comes from, and that's a city that I've grown up in, and that's the city that owns my heart.
Perfect description. And yeah, so can you describe what 420 culture is like over there for people who might have never been?
Okay, so smoking in India is like pretty interesting because in many ways it is part of our traditions. And you have a whole bunch of these priests who smoke a lot of hashish. I'm guessing most of your listeners will know what hashish is, but it's made out of the resin of marijuana, and it's got a tradition. India has got a tradition of smoking, and it is still illegal here though. So it is in certain sections of society, it is definitely looked down upon pretty extremely. It can get you into trouble with the cops, but it's pretty common. Like it's not something that is extremely rare to find. I think most colleges, most parties you go to, you'll always find somebody who's happy to share a smoke with you.
Got it. And what is the legal status of cannabis, or how is it looked upon legally by the government?
So it is definitely extremely illegal. I am not fully sure whether what classification of narcotics it falls into. But it's pretty harsh. The cops here though tend to have a slightly lighter aspect to it because, as I said, there are aspects of tradition related to it. So if you go to a religious town or a religious a place where there are a lot of temples and stuff like that, it's definitely very free and you can, probably find people like smoking by the sides of the roads and everything. But in larger cities, it can definitely get you into trouble. So don't smoke recreationally in public in India, because cops are going to find you. You might not see jail time, but you're probably, it's going to be an uncomfortable situation.
Right. And so could you tell me a little bit about what cannabis is like in India, specifically in Mumbai?
Okay. So in Mumbai, we have the most commonly available cannabis in Mumbai is called Bombay Black. It is absolutely terrible. And in that you will find everything from pesticides to boot polish. Ooh. And it's heavily adulterated and completely fucked up. So you all grow up smoking it, right? Because you can't really afford, and you can't afford much better, and you don't know much better.
We're talking about prices. Just how much does it cost, just to give people an idea?
Okay, so for you to be able to get something which is pretty good to smoke, that should be let's say anywhere from 6 to 8,000 Indian rupees for 10 grams of hashish, and that I think will translate to around $150.
Yeah.
$100 to $150 for 10 grams. Interesting thing about hashish, though, is that 1 gram of hashish will go much further than 1 gram of weed, if you're talking about number of joints or whatever it is.
Right.
Because it is created THC.
Right. And you also have to, if you're rolling a joint with, you have to mix in some tobacco to help it burn.
You have to mix it with some tobacco. Yeah. That is another thing about Indian smoking culture. Like in my case, more often than not, I am off cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But because of my pot smoking habits, nicotine is a part of my daily life. Like I can't, there's no running away from that.
That's a great way to put it. And I think it's tough if you're not a, you know, like a tobacco smoker and you're trying to smoke cannabis in that part of the world.
Yeah, I think that is something that takes a lot of people by surprise, because there will be people who will be, you know, they will be cannabis smokers and they'll come to India and they don't like smoking tobacco, and that is sort of the only thing that is available. So it definitely harshes their high, I think. For a lot of us here now, I think we're just used to it.
Right. And also because in that part of the world, cigarettes are so cheap, everybody kind of grows up smoking them. So usually most people don't care.
Yes. I think as far as smoking cigarettes is concerned, we're probably like maybe 20 years behind the Western world, where like school kids still grow up thinking it's kind of cool. Like it hasn't like migrated from being cool to uncool, you know?
Right. So you talked about hash. What did you guys get? Just regular weed, and like what strains could you find over there?
Okay, so in India, you traditionally, I think all you would get would be like indica weed,
mm-hmm.
And right. Apart from some specific parts of the country, the weed here is complete trash. Complete and absolute trash. Like it's not at all comparable to what you guys are smoking in the US right now. But that is changing. That is changing. Over the last couple of years, you started seeing some sativa strains show up from down south, from the south of the country, which would be like Kerala and thereabouts. Mm-hmm. You have sativa strains coming in. There are a couple of enterprising guys who are started to grow some hydroponic skunk out there.
Nice.
And that is awesome. That is awesome. Extremely expensive.
Right? Like how expensive?
We are talking about maybe close to $600 an ounce. So this is quite expensive. And yeah, particularly compared to like the like what you would get the local weed for. Which is nothing. Like they're gonna give you like a big baggie for like less than like $10. So the price differential is pretty high, but people are willing to pay that price, you know, because of quality.
Tell me about what your preferences are. Yeah. What do you like to smoke? How did you get into it?
Okay. I think it was I was around 17 when I first when I smoked my first joint, and I guess it was one of those things that you sort of you know it's out there, like when you're like in high school or whatever it is, you know it's out there, and you know it's a matter of time before somebody offers you some. And in my case, I think it was at a rock concert, which I had gone to with a few friends, and there were some, you know, friends of friends, and somebody offered me a joint, and I said, sure, I'll do this. And the interesting thing about that was that for 6 months, the first 6 months of me smoking, I just did not get the deal with it. I didn't know why people were doing it. I don't think I got high at all. I don't know if it was like, you know, being nervous as a newbie smoker, surrounded by experienced smokers, and, you know, whatever it is, but it didn't work for me for 6 months, but I stuck to it and persevered. And and I think I had my moment of truth a little after that. So that was cool. So I mean, I think we started smoking, when I started smoking, we used to smoke Bombay Black. That's, we used to get like a little foil ball for around a dollar, which was like 50 Indian rupees. A little, it used to be wrapped in aluminum foil, and it would be like the size of your nail. And you could probably make like two doobies out of that. And we started by smoking that. And then over time, sort of graduated to like better strains and better quality control. The biggest fear that we have in India while smoking is adulteration. There are absolute horror stories about local weed guys and local hash guys mixing in all kinds of chemicals and passing it off. And a lot of people who smoke it are not educated enough, and they get really, really high on what is probably a drain cleaner or something. And they think that the stash is really good because they just got so fucked up on it. And I think that's one of the things you sort of you learn. And yeah, now I like smoking hash more than I like smoking weed.
Oh, really?
Because of simply because of supply, man. Right, like if great weed was available on tap, like if that was always accessible, then I think definitely my ratios would change in terms of my own smoking habits.
Got it.
But it's changing. It's changing. Last couple of years have been good for weed. And, right.
So actually, I want to ask you, where do you see things in India in the next, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 years?
I think a couple of things are happening. I think one thing which is happening is that there is definitely a greater social acceptance amongst young people today. I put myself in young people as well. But I think anybody between the ages of, say, 15 and 35 to 40 now, their perspectives are definitely changing. You can have like a dinner party with a bunch of sort of really suit and tie corporate guys. And if somebody pulls a joint out, it could be like, you know, everybody would be happy about it. So I think that acceptance level is growing. But like, maybe I'm a little cynical, but I think that because cannabis is coming out of the closet in India in a big way, I think there might very soon be some kind of a government sort of backlash on it from a law enforcement point of view. Like, the laws are already there.
Right.
They're just forced kind of, you know, loosely.
Right.
But at some point, I think somebody might see some like major political gains by enforcing this shit. Yeah, then we're fucked. But people are smoking more than they used to.
I mean, that's always a good sign. And do you think there'll be more growing and cultivation options and more difference in variety in strains?
Yeah, I think that is definitely happening because Indians are traveling a lot more. They're experiencing lots of the hybrids. They're experiencing a lot of skunk. I remember the very first time I smoked skunk, I didn't know that shit existed. Like, I couldn't believe it, right? So people are doing that. They're coming back. Lots of guys are coming back with seeds. There is people picking stuff up. I think it's just a pricing issue. Like, I think the prices will definitely ensure that more guys get into supplying it. And hopefully that should like bring the cost down a little bit for everyone. But I think availability of good cannabis is only gonna increase over here.
So let me ask you, if somebody were to visit, if somebody were visiting India, and right. they appreciate cannabis, what would you recommend as you know, interesting things to activities to see and do? Where would they go eat? Like, what type of cuisine? And what's like your favorite spot to smoke in?
So I think if you are a connoisseur of cannabis and you have come to India, then I think your primary stop has to be the mountains, which is the north of the country, which is near the Himalayas.
Of course.
Because that entire stretch is smoking country. And there's a very high quality of hashish that's available. If you're coming as a tourist and you want to sample what India is all about, then you should come here and smoke hashish, even if you have to put tobacco in it, because you know it's local and everything. And then just go crazy on the food. In the north, you get a fair bit of Tibetan cuisine. Which is great because you're sitting in the cold. You just smoked a nice doobie, and you can have some soup and dim sums. I think that works. Some traditional Indian snacks also they absolutely kill it. But you got to be ready for your stomach to be able to handle it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the best part about like cuisine in that region is that it's so flavorful.
Exactly. You have very strong flavors. You have a lot of mix of like sort of sweet and spicy, and it's a great thing. It's a great thing. You come in and you like you eat some what we call Indian chaat, which is the street food.
Yep.
Which a lot of like samosas and a lot of like I guess potato dumplings, deep fried potato dumplings. And you have that, and it's spicy, and then it is sweet, and when you're high, it just hits the spot, man. What can I say?
I mean, that sounds like a perfect way to beat the munchies.
Yeah, it is. It's a good spot. Everybody should come here and should go to the mountains, man. They're beautiful.
And you were telling me that you've been there, I think, multiple times.
Yes.
How was the experience?
The experience is great. There are entire patches which you would, I guess, call smoking country. And those are pretty good. There is increasingly, I guess you have to be a little careful about law enforcement in those areas. They've definitely sort of caught on to the cannabis tourism taking place. But I think if you were like kind of low-key, and everything, I think you should be fine. Just go to the hills. There are a couple of places which are really famous. There's this one village called Malana in this area called Parvati Valley, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's in the north of the country in the foothills of the Himalayas. And they have this village there. And the entire region, actually, the entire Parvati Valley region is like prides itself on having the best hashish in the world.
And so, do you know what they do differently over there that makes the stuff so good?
So I've spoken to a few of the locals to sort of try to get an understanding of it. I think they have some of the best naturally occurring sort of indica strains. I think that have traditionally grown there. It's also a combination, I think, because it's at quite a height. So it's the altitude and the amount of sun that specific slopes get. So what they explained is because they have an entire sort of range of hills over there, and each hill has like a specialty and a specific taste that you get from it. Because of the soil texture, because of the amount of sun that any given slope receives, what time of the year does it receive the sunlight? I think all of those factors sort of play in, and they really know how to grow it, man. I mean, I smoked a lot, and it still brightens my whole week if somebody gives me like a piece of Malana cream. So that's what it's called. It's called Malana cream. And the super special variety is called Malana Super Cream. And this thing has the consistency of honey. Like it's almost liquid. And man, it's beautiful liquid black gold. And anybody who's a cannabis connoisseur and is coming to this world, I think you should definitely take the time to go there to sample some of it and to smoke it with the locals. I think that's a great experience.
Milana Super Cream.
Milana Super Cream. That is the shit.
All right. That's definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, how is cannabis viewed in a spiritual and religious sense in India?
Okay. So cannabis has always been like a part of the spiritual tradition in India, largely for two reasons. Reason number one is that one of our most important gods, one of the most prominent gods, is this god called Shiva. And Shiva is always pictured as a meditating ascetic whose entire focus is largely on his own thoughts and everything. He doesn't get involved too much with what happens to me. And one of the things that he definitely likes to do is to smoke the chilam, which is the traditional pipe, and he smokes hashish in that. So that's a very sort of common, a common piece of picturization of him, I guess you would say that. And so a lot of his worshippers like to smoke a pipe while thinking of him and in on days which are important to him. So that is one aspect how it's included in spirituality. It has a large part with a lot of the wandering ascetics that we have in India, that these guys call sadhus. And these guys basically wander the country thinking about God. And much like priests in other religions, one of the things that they are supposed to be sort of careful of is to leave the material world behind. And this includes sort of relationships with family. This includes obviously things like property and wealth and all of that. And one of the things that they do is smoke very heavily with the logic that it inhibits the libido. So that is something which they do a lot. And there are lots of these ritual smoking sessions, which if you are lucky, you can participate in inside them, and that's actually quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing cannabis is used from a religious perspective and how that impacts society's perception.
Yeah, they treat it like, I guess, like mind-altering substances are used like by shamanistic cultures everywhere, right? Like we don't have the peyote or the ayahuasca or whatever it is. So this smoke pretty heavily. It helps induce a trance state. It if any of your listeners have ever tried meditation after smoking, right? And if you yourself have tried meditation after smoking, it can be quite a rewarding experience, you know.
Yeah. So. Definitely.
So I think that's sort of the space that it's coming from. It's not part of sort of regular religion, you know, because in India religion is pretty varied. So you can't show up at like a friend's house where they are having a religious ceremony and like light a joint and go like, yo, this is the god that'll be frowned upon. But in some very specific situations, that's okay.
It's a communal activity.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you, and this is something that I was curious about, but especially in you know Southeast Asia in the region, do you know have you come across an explanation for why they produce hash or just regular weed?
I don't know, man. It's not as if the weed's not available. Like all the places that that you get hash, like you can dry out those leaves and you can smoke them, like or dry out those buds and smoke them. I've done that, and it can be quite potent. But I think that's just like the traditional way of having it. Somebody must have figured this out like 2,000 years ago. And weed and hash conk, right? Like the weed versus hash conversation, I think, gets interesting once you throw skunk into the mix. But if you're talking about like, you know, the shady ass weed that we get in South Asia traditionally, like a random indica fucking plant,
right.
You take hash on that any day of the week, man. And very honestly, I've not really been that curious as to how, like, who, like, where did hash originate from. I'm sure there are like a bunch of legends sort of associated with it. You always have references, as I said, to Shiva or whatever that are smoking pipes, and these religious books go back at least like 2,000 years. I'm pretty sure hash has been around for at least that long.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too surprised. I was actually talking to a friend about this, and the reason he said was because for two reasons. One is that they believe that converting into hash removes the psychoactive parts, the THC, which is something they don't want. They prefer the physical high. And then the second one, which is a lot more practical, the reason was that it's easier transport, because what they can do is they cut out like the tires in the trucks and just stuff it in there inside the tires. So since it's hash, it's like pressurized as the truck is driving.
No, for sure. That is something that you can definitely speak for, like, modern times. I'm thinking a long time ago because hash was, I think it was around Persia as well. Like, I don't know if you've spoken to anybody from North Africa or whatever it is, they have some excellent hash there. The Moroccan hash, I don't know if you've ever smoked it. It's this beautiful golden thing. It's beautiful. So you absolutely have to do that. And the word assassin apparently comes from the word hashashin, which is all that used to go. And before they went on their missions, they would eat hashish.
Really?
Yeah. So they would eat hashish, and that would they believe that it would enhance their senses and stuff like that. So that's where the word assassin comes from. And apparently, so like going all the way back to the fucking Crusades, like the Emperor Saladin, mm-hmm. who was like the biggest caliph time, and he used to have a cargo of these guys that used to like let out into enemy camps and shit like that, and may even have been murdered by one, but... Random historical trivia. You would have read the book, or at least heard about the book called The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yep.
By Alexander Dumas.
Mm-hmm.
And in the unabridged version of the book, like, he basically becomes Batman in that story, right? He becomes like this, like, he becomes Batman by the end of that story. And he lets on that the secret to his, like, super intelligence and shit is because he's been eating hashish, which he has procured from Persia.
Okay.
So hash has been around, like they used it in a pulp novel in the 18th century, right? And, man, this has been around a long time. And it shows up all over the place. For all you know, it's not something that started in India, right? Well, it probably started in Persia somewhere and sort of traveled over Afghanistan, Pakistan, and showed up here.
Yeah, I think I was looking at a map recently, and I think the original spread was around northeast India, Nepal, present-day Nepal area.
Yeah, maybe.
So I know that it was holy recently. So I wanted to ask you, have you ever tried bhang?
Yeah.
And how was it?
It's okay. It's okay. It's like any edible, mm-hmm. right? And so you got to be really careful of the dosage. Otherwise, it can really like sort of fuck you up and leave you useless. So bhang is all right. Bhang is pretty good. There are places in the, like, again, like, we're talking about when is it acceptable to sort of consume cannabis. Holi is one of those days. So it's you could go to, like, a traditional family and have, like, the old, like, 80-year-old grandmother making bhang for everyone in the house. So it can get pretty crazy. But yeah, bhang's like a tradition, man, but it's strong. The exact mixing procedure, I'm really not sure what all they mix the weed with, because it's basically weed, like local weed, which they mix with like some ingredients like
milk.
Right? I'm not even sure what all. And then that gets put with, mixed up with cold milk, and then you have that. So it's got this sort of minty, fresh milkshake kind of taste. And it disguises how much it's going to fuck you up, because, man, like any edible, man, it's gonna catch you by surprise every time.
So what should you expect if you have a glass of bhang?
If you have a glass of bhang, it's going to take an hour and a half before it kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then it's going to start. You're going to get this you get a pretty good euphoric phase, actually, which you kind of don't get while you smoke. So you're going to have this sort of high energy kind of a thing. It helps that you're typically at this stage in the festival. You are out with your friends and family, and everybody's throwing water and playing with colors. So that helps. And it's like a, I don't know, man, it's like a traditional rave, which is happening.
EDM party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the original rave. And it takes a while to kick in, and then you have this, you have like a good like couple of hours of this euphoria, high energy sort of phase. And then it just knocks you out, man. You're going to want to eat a meal and pass the fuck out. So this, the high is probably like four and a half hours long. Like much what you would expect from like a high brownie. Right?
Yeah, true. And are there any other edibles that are used in Indian culture, or is it pretty much bhang?
No. So largely it is bhang. There are some communities in India that use opium seeds in cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Where you will have like the meal, and then like sort of the dessert will have like some opium seeds in it. The idea being that you eat and then you get, and then you pass out, and it gives you good sleep and nice dreams. But as far as weed is concerned, man, no, that's bhang is the only thing that I know of, which is a traditional edible. And if anybody's around in India during Holi, you should definitely play Holi, because it's awesome. And it's like a big city, nationwide street party, right? And everybody's high as fuck on bhang, so it's great.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were a novelist, correct?
Yes.
So do you incorporate cannabis in the creative process?
Yeah, I do. And but that's a complicated question to answer, because I think there are some parts of the process that it helps with, and some parts of the process that it doesn't help with. And
which parts doesn't it help with?
So I think editing is almost impossible on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Editing is almost impossible on it. Things like dialogue are difficult on it. World building, idea generation. You know, when you are throwing stuff around to see what might stick, I think that is great, because it definitely gives you that little bit of create. But when it comes down to sort of the chipping down work, where you're trying to sort of narrow the focus down, I think that is much easier and better when sober. But this I think has got something to do with, like, every smoker, right? Like, you have to decide your relationship with the substance. Like, are you able to work on it? Are you not able to work on it? What? I know lots of people who work out on it. I could personally never work out while I was high. but I know people who are doing that. So, hey, it's a personal thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally subjective. You're definitely right on that. So when you are high, what are some of the things that you like to do?
Oh, man, if I'm high and I don't have, like, a lot of work, I like to whatever sort of suits my munchies at the time, and probably, like, watch something crazy on Netflix, you know, like, watch some Rick and Morty or something.
Nice.
Yes, that happens if I'm lucky enough to be out of the city. I love smoking in nature, you know, just finding like a nice, like sort of nice spot, whether it's on a beach or whether it's in a forest or something. And if you're able to get that kind of time and space, then I totally relish that. I do a trip a year to the mountains, which is basically just like sort of smoke and breathe in clean air. And eat just some other great food we were talking about.
Yeah, just sort of refresh your mind, get away from the city.
Yeah, I think it's needed.
Definitely. A little mini vacation, right?
Yeah. But I think that's something that like unites smokers around the world.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what would be your three favorite strains if you were to recommend somebody? If possible, if you could choose like local strains native to India.
So local strains native to India. So this is largely going to be strains of hashish, mm-hmm. that if you're lucky enough to find. I already spoke about a super cream. If you guys are able to get your hands on that, it is beautiful. It's got this really long, really mellow high, which kind of, you know, it you can still be productive on it if you want to. It's not a very harsh high,
mm-hmm.
but it's all of this is 100% indica. So be ready for that. You're definitely going to have that, sort of ultra relaxation of your body and all of that. Malana Super Cream is good. Then there is there's this one strain which is almost like a myth. Like you keep hearing about it. Every now and then you smoke something that somebody tells you that's what it is. Again, coming from the mountains, it's called mango. Because it has this distinct, it's called mango. And if you're able to get your hands on some mango, that's amazing. Because that just... it's got this beautiful taste. It's got this beautiful, beautiful taste.
How do you describe it?
It's a harder high than the super cream. Like it's gonna be a little more fucked up on mango, but it's got this taste. Like it's almost got like this beautiful sweet taste, which comes through in spite of the tobacco you're smoking it with.
Mm.
You know, yeah. So every time you like sort of leave the joint down for a little while, you're gonna get this little tingle on your tongue, and you know you're smoking the good shit then.
You know, when you mentioned that about the tobacco, I just realized that you can never really pay attention to the taste of hash, just because the tobacco is also mixed in there, which kind of fucks it up.
Again, as long-term smokers in India, every smoker has their one cigarette brand which they feel is the greatest sort of foundation that the taste is. So there's this local cigarette in India called the Gold Flake Light. It's a shitty cigarette. It's a terrible fucking cigarette. Nobody should smoke that cigarette, but goddamn, it does beautiful things with hash. So...
okay. There are all of this. India, like, make sure you find a gold leaf to go along with the hash.
Yeah, you need to get your hands on some Gold Flake Light cigarettes and to smoke the hash with that. So, but I think your palate gets tuned into that. I know like a lot of guys who are not tobacco smokers will not be able to tell the difference in taste because they'll find the tobacco taste so overpowering.
Right.
But I think it's just a question of having having been doing it for a while, that you're able to like tell the subtle differences, maybe in how the flavors interact with each other. It's right. Not as black and white as it is with weed, though, for sure. Like.
Right, right. And you're right. Experience definitely does play a huge part of it.
And yeah, so those are the two good strains. There is one for people who like to get really fucked up with a little side of paranoia. There's a kind of, people are into that. People are into that.
If you've got free time, why not?
Yeah. There's this thing you get which is called red ice. And
red ice?
It's another red ice. And again, it's off. It's again coming from the same part of the country. Red ice apparently is what is made out of the first crop, like the first harvest that comes in. That's what they make the red ice out of. It is harsh and it is paranoid. It is paranoid. Don't smoke it alone when you're like in a cabin or something. So it's not a good space. But if that's something you want to do, then that's the one to get.
All right, thanks for the recommendation. Okay, if you could smoke with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh man, I just want to say Snoop Dogg, man.
Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, I just want to smoke with Snoop Dogg. Like growing up, hip hop was like really big for me personally, and and he's like such a figure for the smoking community, and just overall seems like such a chill guy. I would like 17-year-old me wanted to smoke with Snoop Dogg, and 32-year-old me wants to smoke with Snoop Dogg. So yeah, it would have to be him.
Well, I hope you're able to cross that off your bucket list.
Yeah. I think a trip to California is a no.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're ever in town, please let us know.
Yeah, I shall.
All right, perfect. I think that's about wraps things up for us here.
All right, man. This was Majid. This was super fun.
Yeah, it was a pleasure speaking to you.
What you guys are doing, and got my fingers crossed for when things get a little easier, get a little bit more legal out in this country, and then you know, yeah, just having the sort of service that you guys give just blows my mind, man.
I thank you so much for the kind words. I hope you can make it out to LA and we can actually show tea in person.
That sounds like a plan. I'm going to take you up on it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, we'll go look for Snoop together.
Yeah, hopefully by that time, Butsy will be big enough that it'll make the process a little easier.
Yeah. Sounds awesome, man.
All right. Thanks so much. Care, you too.
Cheers, bye-bye, man.